Morning, everyone. Please join me in prayer, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Seen this, so I thought I would read it out. Kate sent it out. It's from Sundar at Anandashram, dated June 13th, 2008. Om Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Beloved ones, here is the most awaited news about Pujya Swamiji's health. He has been very cheerful and meeting devotees regularly. Darshans are regular, but because of the monsoon rains, his outings are not regular. The day before, he had been to the Goshala also. Pujya Swamiji's words and actions have always been expressions of divinity. But nowadays, these have a more forceful, power-laden, and many of us intellectuals exclaim, "Oh, what a miracle!" We only pray that these incidents turn our gaze within by attributing these to the all-merciful Lord who is manifest in Pujya Swamiji, as well as everywhere and in everything else also. He is weak even with regular medication. Still, he is attending on to regular correspondence. Some are even fortunate to get prompt replies and emails from him. His sleep has been less. Nothing more for now. We end this mail with prayers to beloved Papa to shower his grace on Pujya Swamiji for his very good health. Love and regards to you all. Yours, Sundar. So it's nice to get the updates and good to hear that Swamiji is attending to correspondence and some ashram business. That certainly seems to be an improvement. From Mother's Library, an East West magazine dated October 1932. Price at the time was 25 cents. On sale at leading newsstands, it says. Surest way to prosperity. Find your goal. Dear reader, do not wander aimlessly, lost in the jungle of life, constantly bleeding your happiness with the thorns of new desires. You must find the goal of your life and the shortest road which leads you there. Do not travel unknown roads, picking up new troubles. I am not telling you to be desireless, speechless, actionless, and useless in the world. All I am telling you is to cultivate the right desires and drop the useless ones. Too much wrong ambition is just as bad as too much passive contentment. As human beings, we have been endowed with needs, and we must meet their demands. As man is a physical, mental, spiritual being, he must look after his all-round welfare, avoiding one-sided overdevelopment. To possess wonderful health and a good appetite, with no money to maintain that health and to satisfy that hunger, is agonizing. To have lots of money and lots of indigestion is heartrending. To have lots of health and lots of wealth and lots of trouble with others and self is pitiable. To have lots of health, wealth, and mental efficiency, but no knowledge of the ultimate truth, and with a lack of peace, is very useless, disturbing, and dissatisfying. reminds me of the wonderful life of Rajasi, James J. Lin, who was Master's tremendous devotee. There's a story that is written in his memoriam, that's a small booklet that's available, that's really very worthwhile reading. James Lin started out in life very poor, and while being able to procure a job with the railroad and being an attendant there at the small, he grew up in a very small town area, and it was just at the station there that he was able to be an attendant, and he also was able to get his brother on as well. And through the circumstances that happened, his brother was to be laid off. Well, his brother was married and had a couple of children. James Lin was unmarried at the time, no children. And so he asked the station master to lay himself off and to keep his brother on. Such was his spirit and his attitude. And then he left the area and he went to a larger city. And there he went to work for an insurance company. And while working at the insurance company, he also earned during the nighttime a law degree and became a CPA. Well, you can imagine he's an extremely bright and capable individual and very motivated. He was still a young man, I think his mid-20s, when the owner of the insurance company wanted to retire. And he had no one to sell the company to, and he was looking around, and James Lin suggested that he sell it to him. Well, here he was. He's an employee of the company. He's just a young man, very bright and capable, but nevertheless inexperienced in that way. So the owner, who liked him very much, was very hesitant. And James Lin launched a campaign, and he went to a banker friend who was also an admirer of him, and the banker friend was able to arrange for a loan. So he went back with a proposal. And the owner of the company accepted it, somewhat a little reluctantly, because not because of anything about James Lin, but of his youth and his inexperience. James Lin took that company, and he began to pay the salespeople a higher commission. It was insured lumber companies and lumber mills, many of them out here in the Northwest. And the company took off, and it grew. And within a couple of years, he paid back the loan early in its entirety. And he went on to make other investments and became tremendously wealthy. He's a multimillionaire, which meant something in those days. But he was restless. He couldn't sit for any chair for more than a couple of minutes before he was up and moving around. He had no peace. He had health. He had mental acuity in the sense that he had tremendous concentration. He had wealth, but he did not have peace. And so he was looking about. What is the answer? How could he find this peace? And somehow he came to know of Master. And Master was traveling to the city that they were in. And he went up to see Master at his hotel room where Master was staying. And he sat there, and I believe this is the first time that they met. And he sat there for 6 hours in deepening meditation, in which he felt a complete sense of peace. Now, this is a man who couldn't sit more than a couple minutes at a time. He sat with Master for 6 hours and got established in such a deep sense of peace that it never left him after that. Now, this is quite a man, and Master said that Rajasi came into this world with that ability to earn money, but he had also been a meditator in the Himalayas for many, many lifetimes. And so he was both a spiritual and material millionaire. But by far, what Rajasi gave the most credit to for his happiness was meeting Master and getting established in this ultimate peace. So when Master says here that you can have this health, wealth, and mental efficiency, but no knowledge of the ultimate truth, and with the lack of peace, is very useless, disturbing, and dissatisfying. Most people live almost mechanically, unconscious of any ideal or plan of life. Many people come on earth, struggle for a living, and leave the shores of mortality without knowing why they ever came here and what their duties were. Isn't this the truth? That so many of us come into this world and we are good people, perhaps. We have some thought about afterlife. Maybe we go to church. We live overall a good life, but really, we have no real overall sense of plan or destiny of what we're here for or what we're here to achieve in the ultimate sense. And this lack of foresight, this lack of insight into our soul and into the knowledge that comes with deepening our awareness of the soul is really what is the cause for this kind of meandering type life. No matter what the goal of life is, it is obvious that man is so undermined with needs that he must struggle to satisfy them. The believer and the disbeliever in God must both struggle to meet their needs. Therefore, it is important to know that man should concentrate on his needs and not create a lot of useless extra desires. He must differentiate between the real needs and unnecessary necessities. It's Master's phrase, unnecessary necessities. Now, the beginning of this is very important because no matter what the goal of life is, it is obvious that man is so undermined with needs that he must struggle to satisfy them. The believer and the disbeliever in God must both struggle to meet their needs. There are some people who think that once they turn their mind towards God and towards the spiritual, that there needs to be no needs. There needs to be no effort put forward to meet those needs. And this is definitely not true, that we come in a human body. And as long as we have this body, and as long as we breathe, and as long as we eat, we must make effort in order to survive in this body, in order to clothe it, in order to have shelter, in order to have food, and all the things that go along with it. And so this is true for those who worship and believe in God and those who do not. Man, often being wrapped up in his unnecessary necessities and physical luxuries, forgets to concentrate on his little physical needs and on his great need of developing mental efficiency and everything, and of acquiring divine contentment. Man is so busy multiplying his conditions of physical comfort that he considers very many unnecessary things as a necessary part of his existence. And isn't there a whole trade out there of advertisers who are out there to convince us that that's exactly right? That what we need is this luxury and that thing, and our life just isn't complete unless we have those things. And the problem is it puts things backwards. We put God first, and then we go after these things. Then everything is given unto you, said Jesus. So we reverse that order. We put things first, and God is a mere afterthought. Perhaps when we're in some real danger or some real difficulty has come into our life, at last we're so desperate that we're willing to pray to God for it. But until then, God is not seen as a necessity. He is seen as something that's ancillary. And this is the problem with modern day living. Though in poor circumstances, he often buys new models of automobiles and new clothes on installment plan, so that he is always over head and ears in debt, and spends his entire time in unsuccessful attempts at making money. He has no time to develop his mental efficiency or to cultivate peace within, because his time is entirely taken up in slavishly meeting the demands of tyrant physical luxury habits. Now, when I was first coming into adulthood, it was actually very difficult to get a loan. it is also difficult to get a credit card. Now they're sending credit cards to college students and to high school students with some kind of credit limit on it. And they're training people at a very early age. I've even seen toys that are given to children in which they have credit cards and in which they are able to charge things. You can imagine what kind of an attitude they grow up with then. It just comes, doesn't it? As long as you have more checks in the checkbook, you must have more money in the bank, right? That's the way that kind of reasoning goes, and it gets us into trouble. In days past, you used to get sent to debtor's prison. Well, that's not so much the case these days, but there's still a kind of debtor's prison. When you go into debt, when you run up the credit cards, when you go out after these luxury items that are here today and oftentimes gone tomorrow, you're in over your head. Those debts begin to mount up. And as a result of that, you are imprisoned. You no longer have such freedom. You're not able to move from a job if you don't really like it because you have these debts that you have to service. All of these things keep you bound. And it can feel like this is God's prosperity coming to you, but it has to be remembered that all of these things have to be paid back. And even if we were to forfeit on it all and claim go out of business, so to speak, and claim bankruptcy, still there's a karmic price with that. When we owe somebody money and we don't pay them back, that hangs over our head. Even if in the world it should forget about it or forgive us those loans, nevertheless, that's something that we have to pay back to this world because we've drawn it from this world. So that's something to remember, that there's no free lunch in that sense. There's nothing that we can just escape from. And we build up those habits. And unless we start to build up the habit of prosperity, then we will always be in debt. Every man must remember that the real needs of life are mental and spiritual efficiency. See, that's where it all begins, mental and spiritual efficiency, the goal. Maximum peace, all-around mental efficiency, and sufficient material security constitute the goal of man. I'll read that again. Maximum peace, all-around mental efficiency, and sufficient material security constitute the goal of man. Great wealth does not necessarily bring health, peace, or efficiency. We can see that by reading the tabloids and seeing these people who have acquired wealth and fame in this lifetime, but we don't see them oftentimes as happy, well-adjusted individuals. But acquirement of efficiency and peace are bound to bring a properly balanced material success. You see what Master does here. Your spiritual and mental efficiency comes first. And with that comes material success. Most people develop mental efficiency as the byproduct of their efforts for material success. But very few people know that money is made for happiness, but happiness cannot be found just by developing an insatiable, soul-corroding desire for money. After establishing that the goal of life is maximum efficiency, peace, health, and success, let us consider the surest way to prosperity. Prosperity does not consist just in the making of money. It also consists in acquiring the mental efficiency by which man can uniformly acquire health, wealth, wisdom, and peace at will. Mental efficiency depends upon the art of concentration. Man must know the scientific method of concentration, by which he can disengage his attention from the objects of distraction and focus it on one thing at a time. Now, I worry for the coming generations as they play these video games and lots of television and other kind of things, that things come so quickly. The brain is stimulated and then it is quickly bored. And we have to be careful here because we acquire this concentration by being able to sit down and focus the mind on one particular task and to keep at it until we've completed it. This is what meditation ultimately is. It's the focusing of the mind and learning to bring it into a still state of consciousness. This is the ultimate in concentration. And concentration of this sort ultimately leads to communion with God. And so it is true in all forms of endeavors that if we're not able to concentrate the mind, we will not be able to have success in this world. I worked with many years with mentally ill people. And a mental illness is something that has biological roots that are stimulated by karmic circumstances. But the flow of information that comes through the senses and into the mind gets confused. There's no sense of continuity in what we would think of as a normal sense of being in this world. So the mind jumps all over the place. And since it's not able to concentrate in this kind of a way, the distraction and the inability to be able to bring the mind into focus creates real problems for that individual. And as a result, they're not able to work at a regular job and have normal kinds of relationships. Mental efficiency depends upon the art of concentration. Man must know the scientific method of concentration, by which he can disengage his attention from objects of distraction and focus it on one thing at a time. By the power of concentration, man can use the untold power of mind to accomplish that which he desires, and he can guard all doors through which failure may enter. All men of success have been men of great concentration, men who could dive deeply into their problems and come out with the pearls of right solutions. Most people are suffocated by distraction and unable to fish out the pearls of success. However, one may be a man of concentration and power and may dive deep into the sea of problems, but still may not find the pearl of success at all. There are many men who have powerful concentration, but they do not know where to strike success. This is where another factor in acquiring prosperity comes into consideration. Brilliant people with efficient minds also have starved or have only meager success. All prosperity is measured out to man according to the law of cause and effect, which governs not only this life, but all past lives. That is why intelligent people are often born poor or unhealthy, whereas an idiot may be born healthy and wealthy. Men are originally sons of God, made in His image, having free choice and equal power of accomplishment. But with the misuse of his God-given reason and willpower, man becomes controlled by the natural law of cause and effect and the law of action, or karma, and thus limited his life. A man's success depends not only upon his intelligence and efficiency, but upon the nature of his past actions. However, there is a way to overcome the unfavorable results of the past actions. They must be destroyed and a new cause set in motion. Now, this is very interesting. And at one time in this country, Mary Baker Eddy came in with what for this country was a new set of ideas. And she had written that she had gotten it from the ancient Hindu religion. But it is the law of perfection through changing your thinking. And it is very true that when you change your thoughts and you change your attitudes, it has a very definite reaction upon this body and upon your health and upon prosperity and all numbers of kinds of things. That the way that we think, the saying that as a man thinketh, so he becomes, is very true. But it is not the ultimate truth. And I have seen certain movements where people are trying to change their thinking. But they use it like a bludgeoned hammer. If you become ill, or if you have a car accident, or someone dies, they ask the individual, "What's wrong with you? What were you thinking that made that happen? Or if you attract a certain person who is difficult for you to deal with, again, the question goes back, what were you thinking in order to make that happen? This is too simplistic of a view of the whole play of life in order to adequately describe it. And it turns into psychological abuse, and I've seen cases where this psychological abuse goes on. And it's not a pretty picture, and the person begins to feel badly about themselves, and they feel less than, because they wonder what they were thinking in order to cause a death or cause an accident in which people are injured, when there is nothing noticeable at the time that they were a causative factor. The reality is that there are things that happen to us that are not a result directly of how we are thinking in the moment. The roots reach much further back into the law of cause and effect. And there is a reason why certain things happen to us, but we can't just be looking at what we are immediately thinking about in the moment. We have to understand the deeper nature of life, and we are here to work out our karmic debt that reaches back for eons, perhaps, into the past, into a very complex weave of cause and effect. What we can do is keep our mind on God through it all, learn to think positively, change the patterns where we see that they should be changed, and get about doing that business. But this idea of blame, this idea of putting this on other people, as if there is some guilt that needs to be worked out by that individual, is just plain wrong. And this is something to be avoided. Some psychologists erroneously teach that by visualizing a Rolls Royce with eternal gas, or by mentally picturing Henry Ford, one can get a Rolls Royce or become like Henry Ford. No matter how strongly all people in the world visualize Henry Ford, all of them could not be like him. This is an impossible possibility according to the law of cause and effect, which governs this earth and the destinies of men. Though it is impossible to conceive of 1,500 billion people of the earth becoming millionaires, still it is easy to think that all people, by real effort, can regain their lost divinity and become sons of God. Now, if we are all millionaires, what would it mean to be a millionaire anymore? You know, it's just, it would lose its meaning in that sense. And Jesus said, in this world, you will have the poor with you always. Now, this does not mean that people need to be destitute, but there will always be differences between individualities. And there are a lot of people who trade on the idea of envy. And if somebody has something more, that means that you are something less according to that idea. But if you have what you need to be a success in this world, and success is measured by what you have come into this world to do, not everybody has come into this world to be a Bill Gates or the world's richest man or to be anything of a multi-billionaire or multi-millionaire. They have come in for other reasons and other purposes. We are all here to serve, and we all have a place to play. Now, if we don't honor that, and we don't really step into the role that God has given us, then something is really out of order in our life. We cannot be in this life and living with resentment and with fear and with anger about our position, and be happy in God consciousness. God has given each one of us a very specific role to play. And not everybody will be millionaires, not everybody will be wealthy, not everybody will be famous. It's not the lot. And there's nothing special, really, in any of that anyway. You can't imagine what it's like, perhaps. You can imagine it, but some people would have difficulty imagining it. If they had a lot of money, a lot of fame, a lot of people attending on them, wanting to be with them, and to wake up one morning and realize that you're depressed, realize that your life is feeling empty, that you're not really doing what you came to do. And here you have everything that the world has told you will make you happy, to make you a success. And you are missing some of the most vital elements of your being. And can you imagine where you look up to from there? Because the world says you have it all. And who's going to feel sorry for you if you tell them that you're unhappy and miserable where you're at? Nobody is, because they're going to feel that you have the ultimate. You have everything that the world has promised. And yet here you are, feeling empty, feeling worthless, feeling bad about yourself. And yet you have everything that the world has promised. Though it is impossible to conceive of 1,500 billion people of the earth becoming millionaires, still it is easy to think that all people by real effort can regain their lost divinity and become sons of God. Isn't that a wonderful picture? That everybody in this world becomes sons of God, realizes their oneness with their divine inheritance. This is really something for us to aspire to and to begin to see this world. Not everybody living in equal prosperity. This will never be the case. But everybody needs a home. Everybody needs clothing. Everybody needs food. Everybody needs health care. These are things that everybody needs. And everybody, more than that, needs to realize their oneness with God. And when you picture this world, I saw headlines this morning, it was on the front page. Now, mind you, this doesn't come as an opinion piece, this comes as news. And it went down the list of miseries and woes, that there's been some floods, that polar bears are adrift on icebergs. And it was that this world is a terrible, terrible place, and that only 17% of the people said the country is on the right track. Now, can you imagine the material prosperity, the potential for happiness that is contained within this society? And yet people are feeling this way about the world that they live in. And many of these things are manufactured fears. They're things that are perpetuated by the news. I have a great experiment for you to do, and that is to take 1 week and break away from listening to the news or reading the news and just notice whether you feel happier or worse. When I went into Cloud Mountain for a year of silence and solitude, I was without the news for that year. And you know what? The world just continued along on its own merry way, just as it ever would. It didn't need me and my constant attention in order to keep it going, or to keep it on the straight path. I was following what God was directing me to do. And if each and every one of us were more focused on actualizing what God is directing us to do and less concerned with what's going on in this world, it's not that we shouldn't be informed. We should be informed. But there's too much concentration upon what's wrong in this world to the point where it distorts our vision. I remember living with my grandmother when I first moved over to the Seattle area. And she'd been watching the news a lot. And she was an elderly woman at the time. And she was almost afraid to go out of her door. Now, she lived in a very sedate town of Edmonds. And there is no great danger there. But when she looked on the television, she saw cities burning. She saw robberies. She saw disasters of one sort or another. And it began to grow in her mind that this world was a terrible, dangerous place to be. Now, the fact that there are bad things that are happening is undeniable. They do. But we have to put that into proportion. If one person is killed in a city of 3 million people, that's 1 out of 3 million people. And we have to keep that in proportion. Otherwise, we begin to get a distorted idea of this world. And we begin to feel that it's worse off than it is. And that begins to build a collective consciousness. And this article went on to say that this world, this country, used to be a place of prosperity. It used to be a place of potential, that somebody could pull them up by their bootstraps. But that's disappearing. Now, this is the kind of talk that was going on in the late 70s. And I bought into some of that to some degree. We're going to have to learn how to get along with less. We're going to have to get smaller. That the greatest days of the nation were past us. And Mother stood as a bulwark against that. She was one that was for universal prosperity. She was one for growth. She was one for more and new inventions coming into this world and making it a better place. And she was right, and I was wrong. And it helped to change my consciousness about that. And I see the same thing being repeated today. And it's a great error that's being perpetrated upon an unsuspecting public. We have to divest ourselves of these negative thoughts. Like I say, we can encounter the problems, but we do it with optimism. We do it with strength. We do it with resolve. We do it with ingenuity. And it's no way are the worst days or the best days behind us. Only if we think so, only if we begin to behave as though. But this is a great and wonderful world. It is God's creation, and there is no limit to what we're able to manifest. There's no limit to what we're able to bring into action here. Unless we begin to think that it's all hopeless, and then we quit the prosperity, then we quit the creativity. We lose our union with God. God, union, is the greatest prosperity that we can possibly have in this world. I was thinking about it as we were driving down this morning and feeling the great sense of wealth that I feel within me in a spiritual sense. And it's a tremendous thing when you feel that God is behind you, God is with you, and you are with God. And you feel that bliss, you feel that joy, you feel that peace in such great abundance it overwhelms you, your cup overfloweth. But it's not a bad thing, because when your cup overflows, it flows out into this world. It flows out into the people who are around you. They feel it within you. They feel that peace, that joy, their bliss, especially if they're attuned to it. And so we've got to get rid of this negative thinking and always thinking what's wrong with this world. We need to begin to think with enthusiasm and with positive affirmation. And when we see that there's problems in the world, we pray for that and we think on it. In positive ways. Where's the strength at? Where's the power at? We're right now in an energy crunch. Where's the new sources of energy? Not just delving up more of the old sources. Where's the creativity that will bring us into a new age? In which the internal combustion engine will be seen as a quaint thing of antiquity. These are the things that we're headed for. And God is pouring forth the creative power and energy, but we have to attune ourselves to it. We're like radio stations, or radios rather, attuning ourselves to different radio stations. And if you attune yourself to a station that's full of negativity and what's wrong and what's bad with this world, then that's what you begin to put into your subconscious mind, and that's what you begin to manifest. But we can easily change the dial and attune ourselves to what is right, what is strong, what is perfect. Been working with somebody recently who lost their job. They had been in the commodities trading business, but they really hadn't done, been very successful at different times, very, very successful at it. But they hadn't felt happy. They were filled with anxiety. They were filled with what could happen that's wrong, and they were always on the edge and sometimes having outbursts of anger around it. And this is a really difficult thing. He was in the wrong position. He wasn't wearing it well. And so the very best thing that could happen to him is actually to leave that work. Now, it's a difficult thing when it happens because you don't know what's coming. And you don't know where your next paycheck is coming, and you still have the same needs. And yet, if we could look at this life and say, all right, God, what do you have for me now? Where do I go to now? How do I serve you? How does this prosperity be drawn to me? Instead of going out and searching after it in that sense, you have an inner feeling that all of your goodness and prosperity is flowing to you. Doesn't mean you sit on your hands and do nothing. I know somebody who is starting up a new business. And when they were starting up a new business, they had a sum of cash to start with. Well, they invested some in the business, but they also went out and bought a lot of things, a lot of toys, a lot of extras, a lot of these necessary, unnecessary things. And they were a little bit lackadaisical about the work. They felt the prosperity of the moment of this pile of money that they had. But the pile of money wore down, and then it wore out. And now they're in a new position, and they have to get after it. They have to put themselves into it in a more full and complete way. Life demands this of us. We have to put ourselves into life if we expect to get anything out of life. We have to give if we want to receive. And this is a basic principle in life, and it's wrong to think that you can just think of wealth and become like Henry Ford. Henry Ford didn't do it by thinking about being Henry Ford. He did it by going out and doing some things about it, making some things happen. And so we have to have the right attitude here. There's nothing in sense of, the world owes it to me, therefore it's just going to come to me. We have to do our part. But if you're willing to do your part and you open yourself to the great abundance of what God is, He will pour everything that you need to you. Now, what do you need exactly? What are your necessities? Well, that can only be determined by God. Because for one individual, the necessities may actually include having a great deal of material things and a large business and a large income, because they have come to do large things in this world. And those are the necessities, actually, for that individual. And for somebody else, it can be living in a humble circumstances in a small house or a small place and serving in outwardly what would be considered by the world as small ways. But there are no great or small ways from the outlook of God. Because if somebody is serving, let us say, as a janitor, there is a wonderful aspirant and devotee of mothers, Fred Kamitz. He used to drive up 2.5-3 hours, well, in the car that he drove in, it was more like 3 or 3.5 hours, because he had an old beater car, and he worked as a janitor for a church. And he would be chanting God's name all the way up, and when he came, he was in complete and total bliss. And when Mother would come out, he would get out and he would do full pranams down to the floor at Mother's feet. And Mother would say that she's asked him many times not to do this. I always felt that he was doing it for all of us. And that she didn't want this, but nevertheless, he felt the necessity to do this. Now, here's a man who's serving in very humble circumstances, and his wife had certain disabilities. And from an outward standpoint, you wouldn't say that he was a wealthy man. But I saw him and knew him to be a wealthy man. He had a very childlike kind of nature. But he had this complete and total devotional nature in him. And it was wonderful to see. And at one point, his car broke down, and so I used to go down to the bus station and pick him up. He'd come up on Saturday, and he'd spend the night with us, and then he would get on the bus, and he would go back down. I'd take him back down to the bus station downtown. But what devotion. For years and years and years, he did this twice a week. He would come up on Wednesday and Sundays. And it was a wonderful thing. Maybe it wasn't always Wednesdays, but certainly Sundays he was there. So this is real wealth. To become a son of God is not an acquirement, but a regaining of that which was lost. To become a son of God is not an acquirement, but a gaining of that which was lost. To become a son of God is to be able to claim all prosperity and everything that God has. It is possible for all to become millionaires after reclaiming their lost divine sonhood, if they then still desire to step down into the field of material prosperity. You see, Master sees that as stepping down if you still want to be a millionaire. And there may be good reasons for a son of God to become a millionaire. But there may be many others who live in simplicity. You see, there's no blueprint here. When you become a son of God, there's no blueprint for how you have to behave Everybody comes with these ideas. Oh, you have to be this renunciant. You have to leave hearth and home and every comfort and live in a cave to be a holy man. But there may be a holy man living next door to you. There may be a holy man who's driving the bus that you get onto. There are those who live in the sacredness of their oneness with God. That is a continuous thing, and they are scattered all over this earth. And if you did not have the eyes, you would not be able to see that. Papa himself said that it was difficult for him to know if someone else was of a completely realized nature or not. And I thought, well, if it's difficult for Papa, then it's better to play it safe and just treat everybody as if they're realized. And what would if you were to do that, to inwardly bow to every individual that you meet, seeing the God nature in them, seeing them as divine? What use of it is for you to be constantly judging and carping about other people's behavior and who they are? Why not see them as God? And what is the result of this? It is to purify your mind as you see those individuals getting greater and greater in your mind in God's light. And what a blessing to them. This is one reason why Papa saw everyone as God. He felt that that was the very best thing he could do to awaken their own God nature. So let us remember that this prosperity comes to us. It is God's gift to us. And that we need to do our part. We're an instrument of the divine. And so it's a whole package deal. It's body, mind, and soul. But if we do this, then we will draw everything that we need into our lives in order to fulfill what God has really have us come to do. And it's not comparing yourself with your neighbors and thinking that they have more and you have less, or vice versa. It's knowing what God has in mind for you. And you know something? I feel like possessions that I have are oftentimes an extra burden because they require someone to maintain them. They require, you know, be able to have, be held up in good repair because they're God's things, right? So we're required to be able to maintain the things that we have properly. And so with each thing that we acquire, there's a little burden that comes with that. And when you divest yourselves of things, oftentimes there's a sense of freedom that comes with that. It's a wonderful story of a man who's visiting down in Mexico, and he sees there a fisherman. And the fisherman goes out early in the morning, and he catches the fish, and it's not a lot, but it's enough to keep he and his family going. And he has adult children himself, and he has his grandchildren, so when he's done fishing in the morning, then he goes and he plays with his grandchildren. He's out by the beach, and he lives very simply like this. So this man who sees him on vacation, when he's on vacation, he's an investment stockbroker. So he says, you know, if you worked a little harder, you could get one or two more boats. And the man said, well, why would I want to do that? He said, well, when you have one or two more boats, he said, then you'll be able to hire more crews and you get more money. He says, well, why would I want more money? He says, well, then you'd be able to take it and I could teach you how to invest these things into stocks. And some days are good and some days are bad, but eventually you can begin to accrue more and more money. He said, well, what would I do with that money? He says, well, eventually you could get to where that money is working for you and you don't have to work anymore. And then you know what my dream is to, well, come right down here on a beach like this and to go out fishing in the early in the morning and play with my grandchildren in the afternoon. And the man stopped and thought about it and realized this man already had that. Joel Goldsmith once said, you know, that it may be the rare millionaire, it would be a rare millionaire, who would see God as prosperity and not the bank account. You see how easily our mind gets transferred to that this check or this bank account or this company that I work for, or whatever the case is, that's the source of my prosperity, and I depend on that. But when we break free of that and say, well, this is the way that God chooses to channel my prosperity right now, but the prosperity comes from God. And I feel it flowing to me. I begin to divest myself of this idea that I work for a particular check each month or each week. And I begin to see that God is flowing to me in this prosperity. We begin to break our bonds that tie us and bind us to this world. And it begins to tie us and bind us, if you want to say it in that way, to God. But when we bind ourselves to God in this way, we free ourselves. Because now, even if this is the way that God chooses to give to us, if that were to be taken away, God is still responsible for the supply. And it is through our contact with God and our harmonious living with God that that comes. Now, with karma, sometimes it comes easier than other times. And it comes easier to some people than it does to others. But your supply is coming to you. And that prosperity is for you. And it's perfect for this moment. And if it's not there in the way that you need it, then you get in deep with God. You go deeper with that God communion. And you tell God that He's responsible for your supply. And you open yourself up to that supply. And you feel that all of God's prosperity is yours and flowing to you now. Now. Not later, but right now. And then you look for all the different ways that that supply comes to you. And it may not be in the ways exactly that you expect it. But flow it will. And it will come, and you may not necessarily be a multimillionaire. I know somebody who is a devotee who is always trying to figure out the numbers of the lottery in order to win the lottery. Tried it through numerology and different things. She was ecstatic one day when she got 3 of the 5 numbers. I think it may have gotten her a few dollars back. But it's not worth much. But you see how easily the mind gets diverted to out there. Out there is the solution. When you turn the mind within. And you turn that inside and you say, God, you must see to it, to my supply. You gave me this body. You gave me this needs. You must see to it that I am supplied properly and to be able to fulfill the task for which you have assigned to me. And when you do this, you will feel God's great prosperity. You will be starting out by attuning yourself first to God and then let it flow from there all the way down, mentally, emotionally, physically and materially. And let it come to you and attune yourself to it. And then in great gratitude, every time that supply comes, which is every moment of the day, you'll feel such great gratitude for what God gives to you. And most of all, is that spiritual wealth as it begins to flow to you and you feel that peace, that joy, that wisdom that comes from God, everything. And there's no amount of money that could ever, ever, ever buy that. And it comes to you as if you were the greatest multi-billionaire in the world. Because in truth, in God, you are a spiritual multi-billionaire with great wealth. And God's constantly trying to give it to you, but who will receive it, you see? Who will receive it? To all them who received Him, gave He power to become sons of God. It comes as such a great gift of grace, of love, of joy. Remember that God's very nature is love. And He loves you, and He wants you to have this great spiritual wealth. So let it be yours now. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace. Bliss.